have a basketball program that we all expect to compete for Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs in Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you was going to be this good, but it feels good!
Welcome on in, ladies and gentlemen, to the boardroom. Maddie here alongside Josh, Johnny, and Sam. We'd like to welcome on a very special guest. He's an Illinois grad, one of the pioneer media members of the fantasy sports and sports betting world. Someone you should, of course, never fade. The one and only Brad Evans. Brad, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us here today. Let's talk about Illini basketball real quick to start off.
Yeah,
we just saw arguably the most complete game of the season yesterday. What was your thought on that game?
Well-oiled machine. I mean, it was almost pornographic what I was watching on the court, guys, to be honest with you. I mean, it was utterly ridiculous, the execution from really start to finish in this game. You know, Minnesota, of course, without, Gabe Clauscher in the starting lineup, that was a massive blow. Liam Robbins was clearly not 100% dealing with a pretty nasty, gnarly ankle injury. You know, he did do his dirty work inside, just unable to do anything offensively, though he was disruptive at times defensively. But you know, Io DeSumo, second triple-double in a week. I mean, it's just remarkable stuff what he's been able to accomplish. Kofi Coburn, we knew, had a fairly distinct advantage, at least I felt on paper, in this game, and certainly rose the occasion there. But it was a team-wide effort. I mean, Trent Frazier was dynamite in terms of his on-ball defense, hitting the half quarter at the buzzer at the end of the first half. Really, you know, everything went right for Illinois. Hell, even the Grandy Man can.
Yes.
Jacob Grandison was excellent in spurts. Yeah, I mean, he was tremendous in the corner, knocking down trays. He was active defensively. You know, when Illinois can play at this level as a cohesive unit and consistently over 40 minutes of play, I mean, they can hang with the Zags. They can hang again in a rematch against Baylor. They could beat anybody in the country, but we just need to maintain that level of consistency to achieve the ultimate goal, which is at least a Final Four and maybe a shot at the national title.
I'm curious, what is it about Minnesota that allows us to play arguably the best basketball against any other opponent? I mean, I think we outscored them by like 60 points in our two games. Is it the matchups? Is it these guys are hyped to play them? What is it about the University of Minnesota?
Yeah, look, we've got their number. I think it has a lot to do with the matchup. Pound for pound, position by position, Illinois lines up extraordinarily well. And, you know, you look at the Gophers, they're not a particularly deep team. This is a team that's been sputtering and a bit of a tailspin here for basically the last 2 to 3 weeks. And again, without Clauscher in the lineup there, you know, it was just a brutal blow that Minnesota was unable to overcome. And you know, I think Illinois just, you know, they plucked him at the right time. And, you know, we did so obviously earlier this season, and Minnesota's had a Jekyll and Hyde syndrome this year, you know, playing excellent basketball inside the barn, with the exception of yesterday, but playing, counter basketball, you know, polar opposite away from the creature comforts there of the land of 10,000 lakes. So, you know, I think Illinois nipped him earlier this season because Minnesota was just, you know, not playing even competitive basketball on the road. I don't know what the mentality is there. This has been an ongoing issue for Richard Pitino teams here the last several years. But to go in yesterday, yeah, they were undermanned, but to just dominate them from start to finish, I think had everything to do with the fact that the Gophers just not there defensively. And obviously offensively, when Brandon Carr's threes and Brandon Johnson's threes, if they're not nailing those with much consistency, they're extremely susceptible to defeat. And in the case of yesterday, defeat by, you know, 3-10 levels. So, you know, it's just an amazing performance start to finish by the Fighting Illini.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like we do everything well that maybe Minnesota has an edge on other teams, which is they typically, okay, their guard, who's going to score a lot, Marcus Carr. Well, we have Io and we have Trent to defend you. And then they're like, oh, well, we have a good big man in Liam Robbins. Well, we have Kofi Coburn, who put up 22 points in 24 minutes. So when you can kind of counter all of their power moves and just out-tough them, like, it's going to be pretty hard to beat us.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know, the weakness too of the Minnesota Golden Gophers is the fact that, you know, the, outside of Robbins, you know, Brandon Johnson get his nose dirty in the post from time to time. But, you know, statistically, you know, whether you're looking at offensive rebounding percentage, defensive rebounding percentage, you know, a lot of those interior numbers, they've just struggled in that category. So, you know, Illinois does match up well with them. They will match up well with teams of a similar ilk, a similar structure. You know, it will be a curiosity, as you guys know, once we get into the postseason in the NCAA tournament. Everything is about draw. It's all about path. And that's TBD. But, you know, Illinois right now, you know, I moved them up based on Ohio State's loss today. They were the highest number two seed. I have now elevated Illinois above the Buckeyes as a lowest number one seed. But we got miles to go before we put this sucker to bed. And, of course, the Buckeyes and Illini will square off yet again to finish the Big Ten regular season.
Yeah, that's going to be an amazing game. I actually led with this in our last show with one of your tweets. I kind of made a little Easter egg for our listeners. I go, Brad Evans tweets, Illinois is drunk on complacency after that Northwestern game. You know, you talked about our ability to hang with maybe the Zags or any other big team out there. Do you feel like at times, though, we do play down to our competition?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was indicative in that Nebraska game. And, you know, Iowa, if he didn't don a cape and have the S emblazoned across the chest in the last couple of minutes, Illinois inexplicably would have ended Nebraska's, it was like 25-game losing streak in conference. Of course, they did that the next time out against Penn State on the road. But, you know, they do that at times. And I think they remove the foot from the pedal, the accelerator. We saw it against Northwestern. And they just get lazy. They go through these lulls. And you could tell Brad Underwood's frustration on the sidelines, you know, shaking his head, you know, probably saying a lot of four-letter expletives underneath the mask in the process, like thinking to himself, why are these guys doing this? You know, why we have taught them time and time again. We have drilled this in their head, you know, maintaining a certain level of consistency. And they just haven't shown that in certain bits and pieces. But I think right now, Illinois understands the gravity of the situation. You know, a lot of Illini fans out there, their eyes are on the prize of maybe trying to get a share of the Big Ten regular season crown, or maybe winning it outright if Michigan somehow or impossibly trips up. And of course, having the Michigan game now on the schedule on March 2nd is massive. And, you know, that could be a game that may determine a share, or at least get Illinois back in the conversation of trying to win the whole shebang. But I think, you know, Illinois fans really need to be focused more on trying to get a one seed, trying to get the best draw possible. And I think more importantly, too, you want to be on the side of the Zags more so than the Baylor Bears. I think matchup-wise, Illinois, I think, could hang with Gonzaga. Hell, I think they could knock them off if they're playing some of their best basketball. You know, we've seen the horror story already play out before against Baylor in that matchup zone. They just have too many bodies. They got too many guys that can really stretch it out, you know, move the ball along the perimeter and knock down those outside shots. So that's problematic for this Illinois team. But again, that will be determined come Selection Sunday, and yes, I can't wait for it.
Yeah, we're excited for it too.
Yeah, that'd be a good problem to have, is playing Gonzaga or Baylor in the Final Four. But yeah. Kind of talked a little bit about the sleepwalking. Are you nervous at all for, I guess, like first and second round games given this track record?
Yeah, and again, it's going to come down to who Illinois' opponent's going to be. I'm not so worried. Like, if Illinois on the one seed line, are they going to get snake bit by the next UMBC, or it could be the Retrievers again, because I got it projected right now as a 16 seed. Highly unlikely. You know, the 8-9 matchup could be a difficult one. I mean, there's some teams out there that I think Illinois could have some problems against that are on the 8-9 line presently. I think Loyola Chicago's the real deal. I got it projected as an 8 seed. They were Cameron Krutwig, a guy with a ton of experience. You know, he was on that Final Four team in 2018. Lucas Williamson was also on that Final Four team. But, man, they just engage defensively, you know, among the elites in college basketball, do the Ramblers. And that's a team that could slow down Illinois, keep them out of transition, get them in the half court, challenge a lot of shots, whether it's in terms of, you know, lane penetration or stretching out along the perimeter. That could maybe give them some fits. You know, San Diego State, I think, is an interesting team, another team that plays elite level defense. Mitchell's a hell of a scorer, and they've been playing with a real high level of confidence, and a team that, again, could get Illinois in the half court and play some rock'em sock'em robots basketball to try to, you know, frustrate them, mitigate them, and just challenge and contest a lot of shots. So, you know, that 8-9 line is always a little bit precarious, depending upon, you know, again, the draw. But I do prefer some of those opponents in that range compared to the 7-10s. And we've seen historically, I believe it's something like 23 out of the last either 25 or 26 tournaments, we have seen a 2-seed exit stage left by the round of 16. So whether in the round of 64 or the round of 32, at least 1-2 seed has gotten bounced. So hopefully Illinois will not get an unfavorable draw against a, you know, likely 7-10 opponent in that round of 32. But I think it's, you know, a bigger mountain to climb, or at least a bigger hill to climb, compared to some of the 8-9 teams that I have seeded right now.
Well, if we're going to make the Final Four, or at least get past the round of 64 or 32, it's going to take a big performance from Io. Do you think he can overtake Luka for the Player of the Year at this point?
Yeah, look, I tweeted this out yesterday, and apparently yeah. it was like a nuclear take. It was like Carolina Reaper hot on the Scoville scale, and I was like, what the hell? I thought it was, you know, pretty benign. But yeah, I said that, you know, Io DeSumo, you know, with the second triple-double in his last four games, you know, I said he's the best player in the Big Ten. He's the best player in the country. Sorry, Luka. And, of course, every Iowa fan came out of the woodworks and started natting me immediately on the old Twitter box. But, yeah, I mean, I'm going to stick to my guns. Is it a 1A, 1B conversation? I think it is. But right now, I would give the advantage to Io DeSumo. I think he's a better defender. You can make the argument who's the better scorer. You know, obviously, a lot of the statistics will favor Luka Garza in certain areas, like rebounding in particular. You know, and Luka's shooting at a better clip in terms of three-point range. But, you know, Io is doing some special stuff. And, you know, whether it's stuff in the box score with these triple-doubles, guiding and leading this team in clutch situations, you know, beating Iowa head-to-head. And you know, really, Luka was fairly quiet in that game, one of his worst performances of the year. And that has more to do with Kofi Coburn and Georgie B and what they brought to the table defensively. But, yeah, look, I think there's an argument for both these guys. I'm going to qualify it this way. They're both outstanding. They're both deserving. But if I had a vote, as, you know, maybe as objectively as I can possibly say with
the Illinois, for those of you,
my background.
Yes.
Yeah, I would give it to Io. But again, we've got a lot of basketball left to be played.
Sure.
And of course, Illinois with some massive matchups against Michigan and Ohio State, Wisconsin as well on the road. And Michigan State's going to be no walk in the park either after the Spartans, you know, playing some tremendous basketball here the last 48 hours. So, you know, there's still an ample opportunity for both these guys to build up their resumes, impress some of the judges that are out there. But as it stands right now, I think Io DeSumo is the best player in the Big Ten and is a front runner for the Naismith on the national level.
Love it.
I'll take that. If there's one thing I know about Iowa fans and Iowa in general, they definitely will not care about the defensive argument. That's a non-factor to them. But I am curious. So I think you started at Illinois right around the turn of the century. Where does Io rank all time in terms of Illini players you've seen as a fan?
Yeah, I'm 42 years old. I've been an Illinois fan since I was a little dude living in San Antonio, Texas. You know, I went to Centennial High School in Champaign. So, you know, I've got deep roots in the community. I've got deep roots tied to this school. And I've seen, you know, some greats, some legends take the court at the Assembly Hall, now State Farm Center, over the years. He's up there. You know, Darren Williams has a very special place in my heart. Obviously, D. Brown as well. And, you know, if you look at it, you know, I think he's on the same plane as D. Brown. You know, he's this generation's D. Brown when you look at it. You know, a guy that is indispensable to this team, a guy that bleeds orange and blue, injected into our veins. And then if you go, you know, back in the old school days, you know, like Kendall Gill was a remarkable player. But I look at the, you know, the Flying Illini team as more of a conglomerate, a team-wide effort. You know, obviously, Stephen Barta was one of the best defensive players I've ever seen. I think he's the best defensive player in probably the history of Illinois basketball. But when in terms of pure dominance, you know, like Deion Thomas was next level. Though he played on some craptastic Illinois teams for the most part, you know, very mediocre. You know, I think Io is in a similar realm as him and D. Brown. So definitely top five. I think right now he's definitely top three. He's got a table there. And, you know, if he goes on a stirring run here and gets Illinois to a Final Four, you know, recency bias is a hell of a drug. But I might put him atop the list overall.
Absolutely.
I want that drug. Recency. I'll take that.
Yeah, we're going to get that.
Well, that's the thing, too. I feel like you can't even fully measure Io because of his off-the-court performance and, like, kind of bringing this program back. Like, that adds to his legend. But we also wanted to talk about, like, these Michigan and Ohio State games kind of coming up. What would you expect the line to be at Michigan and at Ohio State?
Yeah, thinking about at Michigan, based on the Wolverines' performance today against Ohio State, which was damn good. God, the whole game was fun.
It's a lot of fun.
You know, start to finish, just high level, high entertainment, high execution basketball. And the Wolverines, you know, pulling away a little bit late there. But, you know, Hunter Dickinson, you know, I will say this. Let's qualify it this way. Then I'll give you a projection on the line. I think Illinois, if you look at the matching up against these two teams, who they match up best with. Now, we've already seen the Ohio State story play out. And it was an ugly chapter in this year's Illinois basketball history. You know, as they went into Champaign and they won, A.J. Liddell was brilliant in that game. Dwayne Washington, the inside-outside combination, Kyle Young really being a glue guy, were just too much for the Illini. Just had an off night, too many mental errors, too many forced turnovers and mistakes in that game. I really couldn't get over the hump. You know, they'll learn from that. They're a much better team now, you know, the last time they played back in mid-January. But I think Illinois matches up better with Michigan than they do with the Buckeyes because I think Kofi and Hunter Dickinson can go head-to-head and just, you know, really sock it out the two heavyweights there in the post. And have the ability of a guy like Kofi Coburn, who's such a premier rim protector, to go and battle in that one-on-one matchup helps Illinois then extend out its defense along the perimeter. So they can be ball hawks with Isaiah Livers, with Smith, you know, with Chandi Brown and some of these sharpshooters, because that's how Michigan makes its hay. You know, it's the offense flows through Hunter Dickinson. He's either going to take it himself, call his own number, or just kick it outside, and he's a really good passing big man, and they can knock down those perimeter shots. But having a guy like Kofi Coburn there in the post, and if you can neutralize him, maybe get him in foul trouble, Dickinson, it changes the entire dynamic of Michigan's offense. So with that being said, I would anticipate the Wolverines probably laying 2.5 to 3 inside Chrysler. And then for the Buckeyes, it'll probably be 2, 2.5, slightly lower there. It's not the Schottenstein Center. It's not Value City. I don't even know what it's called anymore. There in Columbus.
Sellouts over there. Yeah, I think it is Value City.
Is it still Value City? Okay, so it's still Value City. So I think they're going to be close. I would say that Michigan probably a half a point favored more compared to Ohio State, but I would anticipate Illinois being an underdog in both of those matchups.
I think that's fair on the road.
Yep. All right. So we follow you on Twitter, and obviously, I think you personally, you make the dumbest mistake every single week during the college basketball season. You seem to bet on all the Illini games. As an alum, I feel like that's a big no-no. But maybe now that we can do it, it's a profitable. Now that we're good, it's a profitable investment. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it's been profitable at times. See the Minnesota game, profitless in other instances. So, you know, my viewpoint with Illinois is this. It's pretty rare that I bet them on the overall standard line. Now, I did yesterday. I took Illinois -4 just because of Minnesota's injury issues. I thought, you know, I didn't expect Illinois to go in there and absolutely, you know, carpet bomb this team the way that they did. But you know, I did feel that they were going to, you know, win this game probably by 6 to 8 going away. So I thought the -4 was a good line value. But, you know, historically what I've done here of late, because I know the idiosyncrasies, because I know these teams, this team and their tendencies, just bet the live line. That's the beauty of it. Now, you guys can't do it in Illinois. Because of stupid
not
laws.
Not if my computer thinks that I'm in Latvia, then it's okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're using your DraftKings app Bet Rivers, you can't do it. Although I heard that the law may be changing soon. So all you got to do is like, you know what? I got a hankering for some beef house rolls. I'm going to go drive over to Covington for a minute, you know, fire off some bets, then drive back to Champaign. You know, that's the way to do it. But, you know, if you're looking at it strategically, if you can get some wagers in, or maybe you got a proxy somewhere, I would, you know, wager on Illinois more often than not on the live line, seeing how the team starts off and again, knowing how they typically finish. And that endeavor has been quite lucrative for me. And one of the reasons why I just avoid the line in total. Plus, you know, you saw what they did against Northwestern and Nebraska, right, which was not even close to, you know, covering those contests.
No, not even close.
Right. Do you think that Brad Underwood yesterday had a bet on Io having a triple-double? Like, what was the point of Io staying in the last
little
eight,
parlay,
8-10 minutes of
Illinois
the game?
Money line plus Io triple-double.
Yeah, I think he got it at probably like 25-1 odds, something like that. You know, sweeten the deal a little bit. Nah, he did. You know, Underwood in the post game interview, I was listening to it. He wasn't even aware until his coaching staff, somebody was, you know, charting it and said, "Hey, coach, he's a board away from a triple double." And knowing how historic, I mean, up until Iowa's first triple double, you know, it had been an eternity since anybody in the Big Ten. It was Denzel Valentine, like a decade ago, was the last guy that did it. And then in terms of Illinois history, you know, you got to go way, way back before, you know, you see somebody that had done it, you know, in the past. I think it was Mark Smith, not the one that transferred to Missouri, but the one way back in the 1970s who had a triple double. So, you know, I think the significance of it and then knowing that he had a chance to do it in the course of a four-game stretch, I mean, this is like next-level, legendary status, godlike stuff. And Underwood's like, "Hey, hey, Richie, we're whooping your tail. I know I still got Io on the floor, but there's something special going on here." And I'm glad he gave him a heads up. Patino's saying, you know, this isn't a Bush League move. We're trying to really stamp his legacy here. And Patino's like, "Yeah, totally cool, totally understand." And he secured, you know, that last rebound, and the rest is history. So it's just unbelievable, guys. It really is.
It is.
Yeah. And I was talking to my wife, and I was just like, oh, when they put up the numbers, they're like, Io DeSumo is like 17, 10 or 8 rebounds and 10 assists. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is the quietest triple-double I've ever seen. Like, I didn't even put it, you know, all of it together. But, you know, I guess you think about when Illinois is hitting like 1.5 points per possession at one point in the second half, anytime he was passing it off, the ball was going through the cylinder and he was racking up those stats in the process.
Yep. Speaking of history, during your time in Champaign, forgive me if I'm wrong here, you got to see 3 NCAA tournaments, a Sugar Bowl and a Micron PC Bowl. Do you know how lucky you are? Just for reference, we went to school from 2014 to 2018 and we saw the Heart of Dallas Bowl.
No,
hey, man. That was a good one against RG3 and Baylor, Mikel LeShore, pride of Centennial High School. Had a hot minute before he ruptured his Achilles, the Detroit Lions. I'm extremely fortunate. Ron Gunther was the AD back in the day, one man operation, kind of similar to how Whitman does it, to be honest with you. You know, covert at all times, and a guy that just brought in extraordinary coaching talent. And, you know, after Lou Henson retired, and, you know, I think a lot of Illinois fans were sullen. I remember going to an NIT game at the Assembly Hall and watching Illinois get beat. I think it was by George Washington, I want to say, in that NIT. And I was just like, well, that's it for Ludo, because they're going to, you know, run him out of town. It's just, you know, mediocrity was unthinkable in the 1990s for Illinois basketball. And we had a stretch of mediocre seasons, not really living up to expectations and being a top build program in the country. So you bring in Lon Kruger, coming out the success he had at the University of Florida. I thought that was a coup and a hell of a move. And Lon Kruger's bounced around and, you know, he's doing great things at the University of Oklahoma, the best defensive coaches in college basketball, one of the most underrated coaches all time in college basketball history. Getting him really was a springboard because he'd go from Kruger to Bill Self. And then, of course, you know, Self coming in, strong bag man game across the board for Bill Self, getting some top-level recruits in to Illinois' program, still carrying on that legacy in terms of elite bag men execution in Lawrence. And you know, Bruce Weber taking over, and I understand, you know, a lot of people were disappointed in how the program started to devolve under Weber and Bruce Ball taking the air out of it, but he did some tremendous things. And I would still say to this day that 2005 team would not have been as successful with Self as a head coach in the triangle and one offense that they would, you know, that he would love to run compared to the guard oriented, almost swing like offense that Bruce ran, which was more conducive to that 3 guard lineup that Illinois featured. So, You know, I tip my cap to Bruce Weber. Did a tremendous job, struggling right now at Kansas State, but he's done some great things there in the Little Apple. And then we had John Gross and that whole disgusting, you know, stretch, whether it was basketball or it was football, because of the incompetency of our AD and Mike Thomas. So, you know, things are on the up and up. Whitman's doing a hell of a job. You know, I'll be really excited to see what Brett Bielema does. I think you guys are about to enter another, you know, stretch of golden age, you know, profit for the sports programs that are, you know, most meaningful to University of Illinois, which is, you know, men's basketball and men's football.
That would be very nice.
Yeah, we would love a renaissance of Illini sports.
To make up for the last 7 years where we saw nothing.
And the no tournament appearances during our 4 years. Okay, we wanted to talk a little bit about your career. And I guess my first question is, so I'm in a 10-team PPR league. Do I start DeAndre Swift or J.K. Dobbins?
In the flex.
Well, if it's a PPR, any kind of element, it's DeAndre Swift all day long. I mean, this is unrivaled. Although J.K. Dobbins, I mean, the guy's a touchdown scoring machine. Yeah. But, you know, I'm going to give the advantage to Swift because, you know, the Lions are going to be down by 30 come midway through the third quarter. And all they're going to do is throw to Swift anyway. So minimum five catches.
He might drop the ball in the end zone.
Well, that was only week one against the Bears, and as a Bears fan, I greatly appreciated
it. Yes, we all appreciate it, too. Gave us a worse draft pick as well.
But, yeah, I hope you appreciate our sarcastic question, because I'm sure you get them all the time on really just stupid lineup picks. But we wanted to talk a little bit about, like, how you just started your career. Obviously, you were a teacher and then got into covering fantasy sports, becoming a writer. So could you just kind of walk us through the beginning?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I graduated from Illinois in 2001 and, you know, my degree was in history and a secondary education minor because that's how Illinois does it there. So now I went into the teaching profession. I got a job at the Ready program right out of college, which is an alternative high school, which is located in downtown Champaign. I was there for 6 years, really enjoyed it, you know, given a lot of kids that, you know, just didn't fit in normal classroom environments, or maybe were, you know, unfortunately in the system and were trying to write their lives and, you know, just try to get an education. And, you know, I taught history there. I taught psychology there. I'm a weather nerd. I taught meteorology with the kids. I taught a bunch of stuff. And again, I really enjoyed my time. It was challenging, no doubt about it. I never knew how many kids would actually show up on a given day. So there was a lot of truancy that existed, unfortunately. But, you know, there were a lot of kids that came in and exhibited a strong work ethic and really turned their lives around thanks to that program. So, you know, I was very thankful and grateful to be a part of their lives and trying to get themselves back on track. And many of them gone on and had, you know, tremendous amount of success in life overall. So, you know, I did that for, you know, like I said, 6 years. And I remember I was in a prep period. I was, you know, trying to figure out who the closer for the Toronto Blue Jays was at the time. So I hopped on Roto World, rest in peace, Roto World, which is now NBC Sports Edge. And, you know, I went there just trying to read some of spring training news. And there was an article there from Matthew Berry. Now, I never read anything by my Matthew Berry ever before in my life, but I don't even remember what the headline was, but apparently it was a good hook because it got me to click on it. And I clicked on it and I was like, God, this thing is like a Bible. It's long. Like, I don't have time to, you know, read this whole backstory here and the 2000 words to, you know, start everything off. So I immediately jumped down to the bottom, read some news and notes in there. And then at the very bottom, there was a footer that said, hey, if you're into fantasy baseball, football, whatever, I'm starting this Yahoo group site. And I was like, oh, cool. I don't really know what Yahoo Groups is. And it's now defunct. Nobody knows really what it is. Best way to describe it is like Reddit before Reddit. So it was just like a community place where people could go, you know, post stuff on a message board. So I went, started posting stuff on a message board. And he came to me and he goes, hey, I like what your response is on here. It looks like, you know, you can string together a sentence or two. He goes, I can't pay you, but I'm going to start this website up. Can you write? And I said, can I write? All I did at Illinois was, you know, drink and write basically as a history major. So I, you know, started writing for talentedmrroto.com. The site exploded. I became a senior editor there, you know, within 2 years' time. It was really groundbreaking. A lot of great writers came out of there. And Barry went to ESPN. I went a different direction because Yahoo was looking for talent. Brandon Funston interviewed me in 2006. And fortunately enough, I was hired full time with Yahoo actually in 2007. So it came out on a contract, kind of like trial basis. And the rest is history. So I was at Yahoo for 13 years up until about a year ago. And then we went our separate ways and started FTN. And that's where I am today. And also doing some stuff for SiriusXM as well.
How pivotal do you think gambling now becoming legal has been for you? And did you feel weird talking about sports betting with like the last couple of years, the years before it became more legal?
No, and I'm just thankful it's about damn time because I've been a sports bettor forever. I remember my grandfather owned a lumber company in Champaign called Hillcrest back in the day when I was a kid. I would go in there. It's where old time meat and deli is now. I would go into the lumber yard and there would be an NFL pool every week. And my grandfather would be like, I'll buy in. It's $2 a week. You make the picks against the spread. And I was like, what's the spread? So he kind of taught me and I got the itch at like 7. And, you know, I collected sports cards growing up and of course they're exploding now. So I really dove into a lot of the numbers and everything else. So I've always gambled. I've always been fascinated by it. You know, I was trying to champion internally years ago for Yahoo to start their own sports betting content wing and vision that I said, I'll oversee it, the editor of this, and bring in the right people to do it because there's an appetite for this. They're like, oh, now it's too taboo. And then PASPA died. And then, you know, we see it now and it's, you know, just exploding across the country. So, you know, fantasy has always been gambling. You know, it's just a different form of it. Now, a couple of years ago, I couldn't say that because the fantasy lawyers and the FSTA, Fantasy Sports Trade Association, they come after me. Brad, you can't say gambling and fantasy together because it's going to get the legislatures all upset and they're going to come after us. And I'm like, well, it is. If you're putting skin in a game, you know, it's like you're betting on a future, right, that could pay off in 6 months. Fantasy is no different. So if you're putting skin in the game, that's betting. And, you know, it's more complex, obviously, with the strategy and everything that goes into it. But I'm just thankful that the gray area is washed away. And we are now in this golden age of fantasy and betting coexisting and really a hybrid model. And it's just the tip of the iceberg, fellas, right now, because it's only going to continue to explode as more and more states pass it. And due to COVID and the impacts and on the economies across the country, there are going to be more states that are going to legalize it because they need the revenue and the income. So I'm here for it and I'm really jacked about it.
Yeah, I think fantasy and making brackets were like kind of the first step in like acceptable sports betting. And then that kind of like turned the wave into just betting on every single
Don't tell game. The NCAA that though. Yeah. Don't ever say that. Oh, hear no evil, see no evil. That's not betting. But come to our site and you can print off all of your pool sheets with our NCAA logo on it.
They think that isn't bragging rights enough with your friends to fill out a bracket? Like,
who's a game for it?
Yeah.
That's why we always say, even though we can't bet on Illinois legally in Illinois, we're not betting on the game. But if we could, we would.
We would take it live. Not at the time. We would
we know the
facts.
The
facts
are listening.
Definitely
live. Yes.
So going back to Matthew Berry, first of all, the way that you described the story that you read on Roto-World is exactly like his love-hate column, which is skip the first part because he's got a long introduction and then let's see the players that he loves and hates. So I guess not much has changed there. But do you have any good Matthew Berry stories?
Not really. I mean, we've hung out quite a bit several times over the years. The man cannot hold his liquor at all. he's like Tom Brady, basically getting off the boat, after like one shot of tequila. You know, that's about it for him. You know, White Claw, champagne. That's kind of his game, like champagne, like really. You know, meanwhile, I'm just slugging back, you know, beer, whatever you put in front of me, I'll drink it. It doesn't really matter to me. Now, in terms of like, you know, salacious stories or anything, not really. I mean, we've had numerous interactions over the years. We've hung out a number of times, but, you know, most of it's, you know, pretty boring, benign stuff. You know, he's got all the stories. I mean, hell, the man was in Avengers for crying out loud. And I think he's written about it. I think we've hit the over officially. Yes. Yes, we have. I think it was 3.5. I think he's written about it at least a dozen times in his ESPN column. But
He clearly didn't go to Illinois then if he can't handle his liquor.
No, man. He was a Texas A&M guy. So, which also, you know, would think, you know, you two and two together, you go to a Texas school, you should be able to throw it back. But the drinking Illini are legends in the collegiate world.
Yes, we are.
I'm curious with a guy like Matthew Berry. I think I always use like Joe Lenardi as the example. If you look at like the best brackets, usually Joe isn't going to have the best bracket, but he's like great at talking about, you know, what's going on in real time. He obviously still is very good at it and is knowledgeable. How much of success for a guy like Matthew Berry or Joe Lenardi or even you is in knowledge versus being able to sort of talk about it and get people to understand what's going on?
Yeah, look, it's a mixture of everything. Like, you know, Barry and Lenardi, they know what they're talking about. There's no doubt in my mind. You know, they're very well prepared. They're very studious in their approaches. And, you know, Joe Lenardi is the godfather. I mean, bracketology doesn't exist without him, you know, breaking that ground. Now, is Joe the best in the business? No. Have I bested Joe 5 consecutive years? Yes, I have. You know, same with Jerry Palm and, you know, a lot of the macro bracketologists that are out there. I see things the way that the committee often sees it. And I think it has everything to do with the ranking style that I put together in my bracket big board. It's more of a power rank. And that's really how the committee, you know, at first scrubs and vets the field, and then they place teams geographically. Now we're on an S curve this year, so it's going to be more of a, you know, true power rank than, you know, having any of those geographical influences that we've seen in the past. But, you know, look, you, in this business, you have to speak to the camera. You have to be affable, right? And you have to be prepared. And you got to speak with a lot of energy and enthusiasm. So having the knowledge base is absolutely critical. Being able to convey it to the casual viewer is equally critical, but your accuracy, not so much. That's not weighed nearly as much because it's all about bringing in engagement with that listener, with that reader, with that viewer more than anything else, so they keep coming back and feeding from the trough.
Yeah, I mean, Bracket Matrix supports your statistics about being better than Lenardi. They have you ranked in the top third of all bracket experts. I'm curious about what really goes into, I guess, seeding teams 1 through 68. You touched on it a little bit, but like, how do you kind of anticipate what the NCAA is going to do and also, I guess, just like project what the next few weeks are going to look like?
Yeah, it's tough, and it's constantly changing. You know, you have to look at it as a fluid situation. And like yesterday, God, I probably had, I don't know, half a dozen updates on one Saturday, right? So, you know, every selection committee is a little bit different, too. And you do get little breadcrumbs here and there, especially on CBS broadcast at like halftime. They'll bring on the selection committee chair, and Seth Davis does a really good job, and Clark Kellogg and those guys when they're in studio, just, you know, trying to, you know, poke and prod and dig a little bit to see, you know, and try to glean some insight in what the process is like. And, you know, not all committees are the same, but for the most part, they work with the same amount of nuts and bolts. And there's some great sites out there to get you an idea of getting yourself in the mindset of a selection committee. Remember, WarrenNolan.com is one of those. And what Warren has done, he's actually recreated the team cards that every selection committee member sees inside the war room, essentially, you know, with all the particulars that go into it, you know, how it's highlighted and color coded. And it really does give you the necessary insight to understand their line of thinking in terms of just the baseline stats before they start having very human arguments about whether this team gets in over that team. So, you know, this year is going to be tricky because of all the COVID stoppages and just the inconsistency and uneasiness of everything. And so many teams playing, you know, different groups of games compared to other teams that are out there. But, you know, it still boils down to just really 3 or 4 critical factors. It's, you know, who you played and who you beat. Right. Those are the two big ones, and the net ranking, that it's cryptic, that really nobody really knows what goes into the sauce with that ranking. It's more or less a sorting tool, much like the RPI was back in the day. So it's not a be all end all. If you're, you know, you're number one in the net, doesn't mean you're going to be number one overall. Though the Zags currently are that team. You know, it's, you know, the quadrant one wins, your record versus quadrant one versus quadrant two. Do you have any bad losses? That would be Q3, Q4 losses. Your overall strength of schedule. All those are contributing factors into where a team lines up. So if you guys go to ftmbets.com and you can check out my bracket big board, I have all that stuff right there. It's not just the overall record. It's the net. It's the Q1 losses or Q1 wins. And I have the full record on there, the overall strength of schedule as well, that goes into that baking process. And then I just, you know, kind of move teams up and down. A lot of it's gut. And apparently my quarantine size gut has done me wonders here over last year's with some of the accuracy.
Hey, keep it up. Whatever works.
Yeah, I would love to take a PhD class in bracketology, become a licensed bracketologist. That sounds like there's a lot to cover there.
Yeah, I think Lenardi teaches a course at St. Joe's on it.
All right. You seem to be pretty involved also in prop betting. Do you think you have right now an edge over Vegas on versus game lines on prop bets, or is it going to take a while for them to catch up? Or
yeah, look, and let's speak to the NFL specifically here, because I think there are distinct advantages there. I think it's harder in the NBA. Unfortunately, I live in Denver, Colorado, and I can't do any college player props on basketball. God, I would love to do that because I think I would do really well at it, much better than I would against the spread.
If you want to send them to us, Brad, we'll just take a little bit off the top. We can just bet on your behalf here. Feel free to just send them over.
We get 10%.
We'll just take a little bit off the top.
Hey, you know what? Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, I mean, you guys be my proxy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'm totally down with that.
Yeah, for sure.
But when it comes to the NFL, yeah, there are distinct advantages there. And, you know, I think it's something where prop betting in general is going to become extraordinarily popular, I believe, this upcoming NFL season. We already saw trends where people were starting to veer away from traditional lines and totals, because for a lot of novice bettors out there, it's complicated in their mind. The plus minus system, you know, just doing simple math, they're intimidated by it. But if you played fantasy before, and, you know, there's 60 million people in North America that played, you know, some sort of fantasy, and most of those people playing football, you know what over under 300.5 Patrick Mahomes pass yards means. It's very black and white. It's very easy to follow. It's an elementary way as a gateway into betting. And a lot of those lines are soft. They are soft. And we, you know, I think I finished up, I don't know, was it like 42 units in the NFL? I gave a little bit back in the Super Bowl because I just went bananas.
Okay.
I was like, you know, final game of the year, let's bet on everybody. You know, why not? Will Tyler Johnson get a catch? Oh, sure, over, you know, 0.5. Why the hell not? You know, whatever it was. But I knew it was north of 40 units in total on the season, and I'm an imbecile. So the fact that I was able to get that kind of edge – I don't work with, you know, fancy spreadsheets or algos or anything. I'm just looking at pure data, and a lot of it's a gut call. It's like, okay, well, this guy's out, or this matchup one-on-one, you know, based on the numbers, based on the eye test, is very favorable. And this line is, you know, it's underselling the player's, you know, potential peak performance. So yeah, I'll bet the over on this. You can unearth just extraordinary values there. I think it's going to take a while for the books to catch up. And the biggest key in prop betting, and you guys probably know this, is you got to get in early.
Yeah.
And I think what's going to happen is next year, people are going to, you know, they're smarter. They're going to get access to this. And, you know, you don't bet these on Sunday morning. You bet them on Thursday and Friday when they come out, because you're going to get your best values there, because the lines will shift on the juice. The overall totals could shift as well. And they especially do that at FanDuel. They're always jacking up the totals based on some of the action that comes in. So just got to get in early, and you got to hawk on Fridays to make sure you lock in some of those early values. But yeah, I mean, keep betting the props, folks. That's where the value is, and they're a ton of fun.
I was going to say, on Super Bowl Sunday, I probably tailed you on 30 to 40 of your Super Bowl bets. You've had so many of them, but I probably had on half of them, but I had a good day. It sounds like you didn't have that great of a day.
Yeah, I was down. I think in the end, I don't know. It wasn't terrible. I think I lost like 3 units, which is no big deal.
I think you were on the wrong side of how productive Gronk was going to be, right?
Correct. I thought Gronk was going to be more line tied in that game.
Yeah.
Especially with Cameron Brate banged up and Brate ended up playing. So as soon as Brate said he was going to play, I was like, okay. You know, Brate is probably going to go out there, gut it out. He's going to run a lot of those passing routes more so than Gronk, who was only averaging something like 11 routes run per game over his last five, if I recall correctly. And oh, look, I was wrong on that one.
Right.
No doubt about it.
It's all good.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Josh is like, it's fine.
I won a lot of money. But I lost $50.
Right.
I won a lot of money, so Josh is happy.
I ended up on the right side.
I was all about Leonard Fournette. Everything Leonard Fournette, I was over on.
I was very excited with you on Twitter with those ones.
Yeah, that was a good one.
All right, I want to move on to something a little more hard-hitting. So keep in mind, I took high school Spanish, so I know the literal meaning of this question, but I'm curious, how would you define and explain huevos?
Huevos picantes, if you got them. It just means having stones, or some people say the cojones, you know, putting your neck out there and accepting the results, good or bad, right? And just, you know, accepting reality in many cases. You know, I like to roll the dice. You know, I'm a bit of a riverboat gambler from time to time. You know, I sometimes adhere by, there's always the Hawaii game. So, you know, when in doubt, you know, you're in Vegas, you're about seven tequilas in, and you're like, you know what, I haven't had the greatest night of my life betting, but there's got to be something on the board. And you go over the board and you look at it, and it's, you know, it's like Dreamweaver kicks in the background, and you're just staring at it, and you're like, oh my God, Hawaii is playing New Mexico State.
It's the last
What do I know
night.
About?
Yeah.
What do I know about Hawaii? Not much.
Cole McDonald.
But I know they're at home, and I'm betting on them. You know, that's like a team Huevos move right there. You just go out there, and you're like, yeah, put it all on the line. Screw it. Let's let it ride, and we'll deal with the consequences later.
I love it.
That's essentially it right there. But, yeah, if you're familiar with the Espanol, my 4 years at Centennial High School, not the greatest. I remember Donde Está el Baño. That's about it. But that's important when you're in Tijuana, let me tell you.
I was going to say, here I was. I thought I was ordering eggs on spring break, but I might have been.
Meanwhile, we're putting a 17 parlay. We're putting a 17 parlay on Hawaii in the Mountain West for a Saturday.
So you mentioned tequila as well. How much tequila do you drink in an average week?
Oh, God. We got to really quantify this? I might have to consult a doctor. It varies. Tequila Thursday is a thing in my house. So I always have tequila. Like, I got a fine bottle of Herder Ultra Añejo in the freezer right now as we speak. And that sucker, I put a nice little dent into it, probably half a bottle on Thursday. So, you know, I usually reserve Thursdays as special occasions with that special particular drink. But I've got some cognac in the house. I'll drink some Pacificos. You know, I'd drink anything. You know, whatever's on my mind. You know, today on the Sabbath, I'm taking the day off. No, I'm not really religious at all, but I am taking the day off because I got an early wake up call tomorrow. But you know, I don't know. I probably go through a bottle. Well, once every couple of weeks.
That's it. I thought you said you went to Illinois. You're like the professional drinker. We were expecting.
Well, I am, but you know, I got kids.
Yeah.
And I gotta get up and function, and then I gotta do a radio show. Now, if it's a Friday, if it was like Friday night every night, and I didn't have any responsibilities in Sirius XM, I'm like, hell, man, it's on. It's on like Donkey Kong. Let's go.
Let's go anytime. Yeah. So who would you say is the sharper gambler to graduate from the University of Illinois? You or Jeopardy James?
Oh, definitely not. That's not me. Jeopardy James does it for a living. You know, I'm a dude who bets. That's all there is to it. Like, I'm not a sharp. I don't pretend to be a sharp. I post all my bets for free. They're all transparent all the time. I post it on Twitter. It's like, look, I'm just like you, and I'm going to ride this sucker, and we're going to see what the consequences are. Like UCLA last night, it was a bad day for me. And I'm just like, you know what? There's no way in hell Arizona State's going to play a lick of defense in the second half. I'm going to leave that door open. UCLA needs this game to stay in the in-state tournament conversation. This would be a bad loss for them, especially on their home floor, though there's nobody there. What's home anymore? And what happened? Arizona State crumbled, and UCLA ended up winning, and I got it early at plus one on the live line. So, no, I am not a sharp by any stretch of the imagination. Jeopardy James would whoop my ass in a head-to-head.
Okay. Well, you never know.
And yet a lot of people following your bets. So on that note, sometimes when I'm at work, I'll be sending an email to like the clients or 30 people. So like, I think I'm ready to send it. Then I take another look. I'm like, okay, do I have the right people on it? Did I say anything bad? For you, you have 135,000 Twitter followers, so it's kind of the same thing. Knowing that, do you ever think about that before you send out a tweet? Like, holy crap, so many people are going to see this. Or like, you send a tweet and you're like, what did I, like, should I have said that?
135,000 people will be listening to this too, so it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah,
before you just on average. Yeah, that's awesome. That's great numbers for you guys. I don't have much of a filter. As you guys probably know, I'm pretty honest. I'm very transparent about everything that I do. And yeah, I mean, I sit there, if it's something compelling in my head that I feel is not going to really offend anybody, then fire it off. Let's go. Let's have a conversation. And if, you know, people sling it back at me, or, you know, I love troll feedings. I do that from time to time. Look, I don't take a lot of things too seriously, as you guys could probably tell. You know, I just kind of roll the punches and, you know, I think social media is that way for me. You know, for a lot of people, you know, they get upset when people come after them and they block them. They mute them. You know, I've used the mute button a few times. I think I blocked maybe 10 people in my life just because they were relentless and annoying as hell. And I was just like, all right, I'm enough with you, you know. But if you want to have a civil conversation, you want to disagree with me between Io DeSumo and Luka Garza, let's have that conversation. You know, it's totally cool with me. So, no, I mean, yeah. Sometimes, you know, there should be something in the back of my head and my subconscious. It's like, yeah, man, you probably shouldn't tweet that. But often I don't listen to that voice in my head and I just, you know, say what I need to say.
We greatly appreciate that. One final question. So we've got 5 games left in the regular season. Give us your straight up prediction and then against the spread prediction for those 5 games.
Let's see. So Michigan State, this one's going to be tough. You know, it's, we're getting close to March. You know, everybody had written off, the Spartans and I think, you know, what they showed in the last game, against Indiana, a lot of guts on the road and getting that victory in that game. And maybe they've turned a corner mentally. Now, offensively, they have been a train wreck, this year's Spartans team. And of course, with the COVID pause, you know, that really derailed them. But I think this game's going to be closer than people think. So I would take the Spartans on the line. Illinois is going to win that one. You know, KenPom's got it at a 77-68 win with the home court factor. I would imagine that Illinois would be favored by 5.5 or 6 in that game. And I think that'd be a really good line. I wouldn't touch it. And again, I wouldn't be shocked if the Spartans, you know, kept it fairly close. Illinois won that thing by 5, and old yar, Captain Hook came in and scored the cover for the Spartans. Now, for Illinois, then in the next game against Nebraska, you know, KenPom's got it as an 81-62 win at home. This Nebraska team, gutsy. We saw it in that first game against Illinois. Again, it's all about playing to the level of competition. I'd probably take the Huskers. You know, Illinois is probably going to be favored by 18, 19 in that game. I ain't going to cover that. They'll play down their level of competition, probably win by 15 or so. Nebraska, you know, they've shown some improvement here and there, although they didn't play all that well their last game against Maryland. At Wisconsin, I'll take Illinois all day. Illinois probably a pick 'em. Maybe the Badgers even could be favored by a point in that game. But I think Illinois matches up extraordinarily well with this team because they can extend out. And, of course, Nate Reavers just – he's got no answer for Kofi Coburn.
He's so bad at rebounding, and he's supposed to be.
Yeah,
he's,
the whole team is. Yeah. They are a classic live and die by the three squad.
I think our boss, Robert, tweeted out today saying that I would be their leading rebounder.
You say Io?
Which
Io?
Okay, Io. Not you, but Io.
Yeah.
It's not like you said I would be their leading rebounder.
My 5'8 self would be the leading rebounder.
5'8 on a good day. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
so
I'd take the over on 4.5 boards for you. I think he could grab them. and then you look, so I would take Illinois, whether if they're laying one or it's a pick 'em or Wisconsin's laying one, I'd definitely take them. I think they could win that game by 6+, the way that Wisconsin's really struggled putting ball through basket. And then the last two games we talked about, Michigan and Ohio State. Again, I think Illinois is going to be, you know, probably a 3-point underdog against the Wolverines. I think they match up extraordinarily well. Give me Illinois. I take Illinois straight up on the money line, to be honest with you. I think they could win this game outright because, again, they just match up well personnel-wise across the board against this Wolverine. Wolverines team, not so much against the Buckeyes. And we know the Value City Arena has been a house of horrors for Illinois over the years. I would probably take the Buckeyes there, lay in 2.5, and Illinois might get snakebit in that game and lose the series to them outright in the regular season.
That's probably still maybe a one seed, at least maybe the best second seed, if that ends up happening, because it sounds like you just had one loss there to Ohio State at the end.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely going to be in the one seed conversation. Gonzaga, Baylor are not going to budge. But Baylor, though, man, I mean, what are they going to look like? What are they going to look like off COVID pause? And they missed two games against West Virginia, which are kind of critical.
Yeah.
In that conference. So are they going to be rescheduled? They're going to have to play a ton of games or a short, you know, span. Are they going to be like SIU Edwardsville, who's played like 10 games in 19 days, which is insane to me? You know, it could be a run, although, you know, more limited amount of games, just tightly compacted in a small window for Baylor. And, you know, they could trip up and maybe they fall down a line. But yeah, look, Michigan, Illinois, Ohio State, and I would argue too, Alabama. Those are teams that are all going to be fighting for those last two number one seeds. Michigan clearly has a leg up right now. Mm-hmm. But that fourth number one seed is TBD, and we got a lot of basketball left to determine exactly who's going to get it.
And a Big Ten tournament.
And the Big Ten tournament, of course, where
anything
can happen.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And folks, let's say it comes down to Sunday. That Sunday game does not matter. In the selection committee's eyes, it does not matter in terms of the one seed, the two seed. You know, even if Illinois, let's say it's like a rubber match against Ohio State or Michigan or whoever they end up going up against, if they are in the final of that game and you're thinking, oh, this is going to determine who's going to be, it doesn't matter. The committee has already made that decision. We have seen this time and time again. They have admitted it outright after the teams had been, you know, selected and placed. That Sunday game, because of when it's played right before the Selection Sunday show, they've already made a decision on where teams are landing.
Sounds like a AP voter with some West Coast bias there.
Yeah, I could see that. No doubt about that. Yeah, there's a lot of AP voters with West Coast bias. That's ESPN. Yeah, they all got East Coast bias. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like, oh, have you watched Gonzaga play? I saw him play once for a half, and then I fell asleep. Right. That's why the Eastern time zone sucks.
There's still that Hawaii game at the end of the night, though. There's still that Hawaii game.
And yet Syracuse somehow found their way in again, year after year.
Yep. East Coast, Syracuse.
Bubble Boeheim eating his boogers on the sideline.
Well, I cannot think of a better way to end this podcast than with talking about boogers. But Brad, thank you. This was an absolute blast. As long as you keep us on the one line, you're welcome on anytime to chat with us. But you can follow him on Twitter for unfiltered gambling takes and advice. You can read him on FTN Bets, listen to his show on Sirius XM Radio. Thanks so much, Brad. We'll catch you on the next one, everyone. ILL.
All right. I. Thanks for having me on, guys.